Test, 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 test. This is Steve Weatherby, and I'm interviewing Patrick Shepherd on November the 21st, 2005. Mr. Shepherd, I'm going to ask you to begin by asking you how old you were in 1939, and what rank you began your service, and go ahead.
I was 19 in 1939, but I didn't join until 1940, 20 years old, in June 1940. It's the BC Regiment, you cannot sell rifles in Vancouver, which then in 1941 was changed to the 28th Regiment.
And when you left the Army, what rank were you, and when did you leave?
I left in 46, I guess it was. I stayed in England for a while. I was married in England, and I stayed there and worked in repatriating troops back to Canada after the war finished. And
what was your rank?
I was a lieutenant through all during the war, but then just towards the end of the war, they put me for captaincy, but I didn't go through. It stopped all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
And did you serve with the BCR all the way through?
No.
You couldn't have. You were in Italy.
No. Worked our way across Canada, of course, to the BC Regiment, and ended up in DeBert, Nova Scotia, where they were asking for officer candidates, I suppose. And so I was chosen to be one. We went to Rockville and went through the course, graduated, went to Camp Borden, did more training in Camp Borden on ram tanks.
Right. Why do you laugh? I think I know, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, the ram, you know. The ram, like a lot of the old tanks in those days, were equipped with 2-pounder guns and mechanically, you know, terribly tall and whatnot. But, we trained on them and that sort of thing, but eventually we got sent overseas.
Were you? Was this still the BCR?
No.
What regiment were you with?
We were on just as a. I'd become a commissioned officer then, and all the commissioned officers went through Rockville, Op 2, they called it. Were on, sent over as a, just whenever it was needed. They were sent over and sent to various regiments in England.
When you were training with ram tanks, that was at Borden?
That was at Borden.
So were you with a regiment then, or were you getting
no.
a general kind of...
We were on training at Camp Borden after being cut in an officer.
So you'd already been sent to the Armored Corps. You were going to be an Armored Corps officer.
That's right. It just happened that the changeover from the BC Regiment to the Armored Corps happened at that time in the group. So anyway, we got overseas, and I was posted to the 3 Rivers Regiment.
Okay.
The first time with brigade, which was just situated in Brighton at that time, in Kent Town. And we stayed there for a while, then transferred to Worthing in Sussex. And then we trained on various schemes. We used to go on schemes around southern England to keep us occupied.
Did you have tanks at this point?
We had tanks.
Really?
Well, we had Churchill's when I first got there. church on time.
Was this a French-Canadian regiment?
French-Canadian, that's right.
Did you speak French?
No, I didn't speak French.
I guess they were short of French officers, French-speaking officers.
Well, that's another story, you know. Those things were going on in those days that they wanted, they were the French, there were French in the regiment, and there was the regular, ordinary us guys sort of thing. And the feelings were that the Frenchmen wanted French, wanted to be completely French for some reason. Even that was the feeling at that time. And it was all through the war. It was the same thing. It was understandable because, you know, it was a French movement. Anyway.
How did they arrange that with us? Two squadrons in French, one in English? Or
No, they were split up. The French guys, I like the French people. I enjoyed it very much. But they were split up evenly, I suppose. The colonel became French. The TIC was French. French Canadian, I'm talking French Canadian. And a lot of the others too. But anyway, everything was done in English, except when they were in the mess and that sort of thing. We spoke in the French Canadian. But we were there, and then they sent us up to Scotland. We got Shermans after that.
How did you find the Churchills?
The Churchills.
Cooperated with?
The Churchills were, they were very slow, you know, very slow. 4 miles to a gallon, you know. Mm-hmm. 4 gallons to the mile, I should say.
And how fast could they go?
Oh, very slow. Maybe about 12 miles an hour, something like that.
Right.
And a 2-pounder got on there as well. They were pretty well armored.
What would a 2-pounder gun be the equivalent in terms of millimeters? 37 millimeter?
About a 37 millimeter. Yes. We have 45s. Yeah, 75s on the
Shermans.
Right. Okay. Short barrel 75s to start with.
I listened to another tank officer who went through the same experience, starting with Churchills, and he also said they were mechanically unreliable. They would break down every few miles.
That's right. That's right. Very much. We had to do maintenance on them continually. That's one of the worst jobs we had, was maintaining the tanks. Even the Shermans had to be maintained. They had to be taken apart and put together again, and the motors taken out. And of course, the Sherman was we were using Chrysler
gasoline engine.
Five banks of 6 cylinders, of 30 cylinders of gas at that time. And of course, everything had to be tuned up, of course. But anyway, with the Churchills now, I remember in Sicily, they're just outside of Catania, on the east side of Catania there, on the west side of Catania, I should say. In an olive grove there, the British army were on our right, and of course these three Churchills were one up, you know, three in configuration, three tanks, all shot out with five graves on the side of each one of them. They didn't stand a chance with the German guns; they were just impossible. Mm-hmm. You know, with a 2-pounder gun, using an 88, that sort of thing was absolutely ridiculous.
So this was a British regiment?
It was a British regiment.
Well, I understand Army. They got up-armored and up-gunned as the war went on.
But yeah, it was 8th Army. But it was sad to see the Churchills. I thought, my goodness, thank goodness they were in our tanks, because they could move fast, at least. And they did a good job of carrying troops on the long distances between points of interest. We carried the infantry on the backs of our tanks, which solved a lot of problems with the infantry and made the advance a lot quicker. In fact, some of the Germans even mentioned that in their reports that that we were on their tails most of the time, sort of thing. So actually the tanks we were using were good. I liked them.
The Shermans?
Except for the firepower. We just had a chance with the long range and the German things.
Did they, in the Italian campaign, were 17-pounders, were your Shermans equipped with 17-pounders?
No, no. Towards the end, they were.
When you were still in Italy, or by the time you'd come back to Northwest Europe?
When we were still in Italy, we ended up overlooking the full valley of the mountains.
Your tank troops were four tanks each?
Three.
Really?
Well, okay. three in the troop.
Huh. Okay, so in Northwest Europe, they were four per troop, at least.
Well, we had three tanks. And, of course, there was a headquarters squadron, too.
And how many tanks per squadron?
Well, there was three troops, and 15, I guess. Sometimes there were 18, but 15 was the amount of tanks we had.
Okay.
Three troops of three, and headquarters had three tanks.
So that would be nine tanks?
Nine. 12 to 15.
So you went in, you were part of the invasion assistance?
Yes, we went to Scotland and waterproofed our tanks up in Scotland, living in Hawdon Castle, which is nice. Well, they did that. So then we moved down into, got on LSTs, landing ship tanks, and went down towards the Straits of Gibraltar. But unfortunately, the LST I was on with our company lost power just off the Bay of Biscay there. And they were manned by the British Navy, and of course these were diesel-engined LSTs that are made in America. And of course, the number one, which was the engineer on these LSTs, British Navy, they didn't know anything much about diesel engines, I suppose, and he couldn't fix it, so we just wallowed in the trough of the ocean as we were going down, just back and forth. And finally, the radio to London, and London radio Washington, I guess, and I got the message back how to fix these things, and got back to us on our little puddle jumper, eight knots, and we finally caught up with the convoy in Gibraltar.
Oh, so there you were all alone for a while?
We were all alone, all out there just wallowing in the wind.
Presumably many German submarines looking for you.
Oh, sure they were. Well, there's just we pulled out of Gibraltar, of course. Right alongside us, one of the big troop ships got caught and went right down beside us. Huge thing, was it? Looked like a high-rise building going straight up in the air. Came right straight down. Big guns and tanks and trucks sitting on the bow. You could see it just come up like this, and all those things just falling off.
Was that equipment then for a Canadian outfit or
part of our
first division?
Part of our first division.
Not your tanks, though.
No, we were.
Were your tanks with you, traveling with you in your?
Oh yes, oh yes. We were ready to go. Then we went down the Mediterranean and stopped in Algiers. Stopped in Algiers, I suppose, for the rest of the convoys or whatever they were to gather and to get ready for the assault, which we did the next morning. We took off the facility.
Now you said your tank, you waterproofed your tanks. Were they for swimming? Your swim tanks going to swim like dual drive tanks? Or?
Well, they extended the exhaust up and the intake valves up so they were above the tanks and we could get off the ramp of the LSTs into the water.
Okay. And use your tracks to...
And then run up the beach.
Right.
But we all got into water as we had.
Right.
But there was no one there.
At your beach?
At the beach. There was no one there, really, except a few startled Italians that were waking up early in the morning.
Right.
There's all the gunfire going on. There's all the big battleships and monitor ships with their 16-inch guns firing away.
That would wake you up, yeah. Get you out on the beach.
Yeah.
Did your training in England prepare you for your operations in Sicily and Italy?
Somewhat, but it was different. The whole system wasn't trained for active war. They were trained for training war, you might say, not active war. And things are different, absolutely different. Things change so quickly. Change of command, like with me in a troop, we didn't know what was going on. No one told us what was going on. All we got was from the major who was in charge of the company. We'd get his orders. We'd have an O group and he'd say, well, we're going 5 miles up the road to a certain spot, and that was it. But that's the only thing we got. We didn't know who was on our right, who was on our left. What the whole objective was, where our other troops were, nothing. And that was my big concern all during the war, was the support we gave to our infantry, not knowing where our infantry were, where they were. When you're in action, you're looking for movement, and it's long distance. How are you going to tell who is friend and who is foe?
Yes, it's just movement.
It's just movement. And I'm sure that a lot of our infantry were killed by our own fire in a lot of cases. So that's one thing that was never resolved, really. The lack of communication, I think, there was a lack of communication.
Not between you and the infantry, but also between you and your own command structure, it sounds like.
Between us and our own command structure.
Mm-hmm. I think that, I heard that. I guess I just read a recent book called Because We Are Canadians. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've heard of it.
A sergeant in the Lincoln and Welland Regiment. And, I think in virtually every 10 pages or so, he says something like, as usual, they told us nothing.
And, exactly, exactly. And I have a feeling that even the ones in command knew nothing as well, in a lot of cases. They were jockeying around. I don't know what was going on, really, but if looking in retrospect, that's what they must have been doing, just jockeying around, learning their trade as they went along too. No one had been into action before. So this was all a learning thing. Up against seasoned troops, except for the 8th Army, of course, and they were nonchalant about it. I mean, we went, in one occasion, we were called up by the Three Rivers Regiment, which I belonged to, was called up a good many, all the time, it seemed. We were the only, the brigade was Three Rivers, the Ontarios, and the Calgary tanks, the Three Rivers. But the Three Rivers were used predominantly all through Sicily for some reason, which I can pick up one reason.
Go ahead.
Well, it was the colonel, when we left Scotland, was under orders to not to open up where we were going. And apparently he had opened them.
Opened his orders?
Opened his orders too soon. And he was reprimanded by General Kitchen, who was in charge of his family and almost sent back to England. I have a colour on a regular. I shouldn't say this, but it's one of the things that did happen. Whether that had an effect on us being called in all the time. Mm-hmm. We fought so many battles, it was pretty rigorous.
Well, I remember following, reading about the Calgary tanks in Sicily, and basically there wasn't much happening with them.
No. We were used quite extensively for some reason. I don't know what it was, really, but we were, even the British 8th Army called on us a lot as well. We started out fighting with the Canadian infantry, the Loyal Edmontons and Scottish and PTC line, but then the British Army, 8th Army, called on us. And one time we went up to, they called on us, and we had to, this was the 231st Brigade of the British Army. It was the Devon's, Dorset, and Hampshire's. And they were pinned down. So they called on us, and we went up to this high point, and they were under fire, being pinned down, of course. There's many of them were pursuing. We got out of our tanks, and we could hear these mini workers going up, whoop, 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 whoop.
That's the noise they make when they fire?
That's when they're firing. And of course, you wait for a while, and then you hear the organ coming, the music coming over the and the members.
But it did make a sound like an organ, when the shells come in?
When the shells are coming in. Uh-huh. Because they're quite large. They open up like an octopus. Uh-huh. And of course, they can explode. You see the open shells and they're like an octopus.
So these must have been guidance devices.
Like no, they were.
You could see them.
And they were being pinned down. Of course, we got our attacks. And of course, the colonel, this, I forget which regiment it was. This British, colonel. Well, come in. We'll have some tea first. You know, not really. Here, all these troops are being pinned down and shelled, and he just said, nonchalantly, "Let's go in and have some tea." You know,
yeah.
This was just
right.
part of the day's work. Of course, I'd been through the North African campaign. I suppose we're used to doing things that way.
Mm-hmm. So, basically, what you were doing in Sicily was infantry support, and throughout Italy.
Infantry support, that's right.
And was that what the training was in
no.
Not great no. Assaults by armored, but basically
not armored against infantry. Not armored against armored, but we were combined operations.
Right.
There was no air support. There were the odd aircraft flying around, but some of them were German, some of them were, I suppose, British. But,
so you didn't have an arrangement to call in air support?
No. That was something that was lacking. See, the Germans were just, they were well prepared, they were well organized. All they did was hold the line for a certain length of time until they withdrew. Their main plan was just to withdraw from Sicily, and they did it very quietly and very evenly as they went towards Messina, Straits of Messina. They just pulled back, and they would stop, fight for a while. When they're ready, they moved back again.
Must have been frustrating for you.
And we had to keep up with them. I mean, all the time they were laying traps for us.
Booby traps?
Well, traps for our tanks or for the infantry. You'd go along for miles and turn a corner, you know, the roads in Italy and Sicily were up and down. And you had to stay on the road with tanks because it drops off on the left. And
cliff on the right.
Cliff on the right with a steep gully in the bottom. But you had to stay on the roads. And they knew it, and they knew exactly where they were going to catch you. And they did. They did many times. I got caught. I got caught. Going into this little town in Sicily, one of our majors and one of our lieutenants decided to go on an observation, so that he went up ahead of the regiment in this armored carrier. Wanted to just see what was going up and up ahead, and of course they got shot. And they called on us, and we went up. And turned the corner, went up a street grade, turned the corner, and just got level on the top of the hill, and bang, bang, we got knocked out of our tanks. Mm.
Just by an anti-tank gun?
Yeah, anti-tanks. Which were mainly about
So did you lose any men?
Yes. Yes, we did. Of course, when we got hit by armor-piercing shells, it doesn't stop on the edge of the tank. It comes in and goes around.
Bounces around.
And my tank went up in a matter of seconds from the time it was hit. It missed us. The anti-tank gun missed us a couple of times. I could feel the heat of the projectile as it went by my head. I could feel the heat of it. But then the second or the third one I think it was, hit us, and it must have hit the gas tank because it went up. The whole thing went up through the turret right off the tank.
So you must have been blown out of the tank.
Yeah, I got jumped out. Well, we jumped up and we got hit because it was on fire.
Okay. And then the turret blew up.
And then the turret blew up. And then the machine gunners were lying there trying to get organized.
Right.
And then that afternoon I didn't have a tank. And so that afternoon I got a ride because the regiment went through afterwards. The rest of the regiment, the tanks went through afterwards. I got a ride up with an ammunition truck belonging to the infantry. It was full of ammunition. And we got down this road. We kept on going and going and going. And we finally, I suppose we'd gone too far because we got hit again. We got blown out of this truck in the same afternoon. And
then all the ammunition went off?
No, we didn't have any ammunition.
You'd be lucky.
But it blew me right out of the side of the truck, and I landed on my arm on it. Took the skin off this arm, but then a piece went into my leg here. That was a bad day for me, with us. Getting knocked out of a tank and then the truck at the same time. Yeah, it was just one of those things that they could catch you when you were. They knew where to.
The roadblocks
set up there.
So how long did it take for you to get back into action?
Well, it was, I suppose when we got blown out of the truck. I walked back. I had to walk back up this long road, back up the hill, because we were way ahead of our troops.
You've gone accidentally
way ahead of them. To pass them. And one of my friends in the tanks, I finally got back way up in the rear, and he was ready to plow me with his tank. He said he didn't know there was a German coming up the road.
you were way in advance. You passed the tanks.
Yeah, but I finally got into the other tanks, and of course we then, of course, it was a matter of just carrying on. My major was in charge of our squadron. He was a hell of a good guy. Jack Pearson, his name was. He put me on point all the time, which was the point tank going up to the roads.
Front?
In the front.
So
I was leading the Kenyan army, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you were already doing that with your ammunition truck, but.
That's crazy, you know. There's the whole Kenyan army behind me, and
yeah,
it's stupid, you know, in a way. But anyway,
what do you mean? Why was it stupid? Somebody had to leave.
Well, I know someone had to leave. That was he didn't know what was going on. Really. Yeah. But Jack Pearson, he got me. He had me leading all the time, and it was just, you know, you never knew when these traps would be sprung.
You know, you'd certainly want to rotate the lead.
The only time I wasn't leading was when a sergeant was leading it, and we were going down this road to Missouri, and he was leading these tanks and leading our whole regiment, and they let us go through the town. Missouri, which was a small town, built on both sides, but then on the other side of the town, just as we got to the other side of the town, the road dipped into a sort of a ravine with a bank up on the right and another bank on the left, which were obviously manned and of course run the anti-tanks, German anti-tanks, and they waited until the lead tank and about 12 other tanks got down in this. I was back in the tanks at that time. And they got down in the dip down below, and then they opened up and knocked out 10 of our tanks.
Wow.
And Jack Pearson, our major, was severely wounded at that time. And that was the last we saw of him.
And were you involved in this yourself?
Oh, yeah.
They get your...
My tank, I was just at the edge of the tower, just before the dip. And all I could do was use HE. And that's what I did. I used HE and around the lip of the edges of the hills where they had the tanks in it.
Could you tell where they were, or were you guessing?
I could see the shells coming in. Mm-hmm.
You could see the gun, the smoke from the guns?
Not the gun, you could see the projectile.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You could see the projectile coming into our tanks.
You could follow from where it was?
Yeah, it was, you could...
Was it tracer?
No, it wasn't tracer. It was just like, it was a, you could see the projectile going through the air.
Yeah.
Now, literally, now, that's it's amazing to think about it.
It is. Yeah. I would have thought they moved too fast to see.
You would think it was going too fast, but it wasn't. Whether the projectile was going so fast, and maybe it was the... charge they had behind it was going out. But these things were going right across this ravine and hitting our tanks. And I was on the edge, so I was using my HE. And I was using a German Schmeisser at that time in the way, which I used, because we're right in the town.
That's a submachine
gun. A submachine gun. We had Sten guns, but there was pop, sort of thing.
Right.
Schmeisser was a faster than I got there. Anyway.
So you were firing, gun was firing, and you were firing
your... Well, we had to around the, because of snipers and whatnot.
So didn't the Shermans, or did your Shermans not have 50 calibers and have it on the turret?
We never used them. They were too awkward to use. You had to stand up almost on top of the turret to fire the damn things. And, we never used them. Not at the start, anyway. Some of them probably did, but we didn't.
Did you
even in more totally.
Did you always fight out of the turret? I mean, with your head out of the turret? Head
no, not in, not in, like in Ortona. When we went into Ortona, we had to close down because the snipers and the streets are narrow, mm-hmm. and buildings were tall, and snipers and guys with their beehives would throw them down there. And,
what's a beehive?
A beehive is a charge, and it's like a sticky charge, and it would stick onto the tank and blow it like a charge. But no, there were a lot of snipers there, and we had to close down, which made it difficult in the towns. And that was a bad time too, because the Germans had blown buildings on both sides and heaps of rubble in the center of the road, which you had to manipulate over. Usually when you're going up, you're showing your belly a bit. Mm. And going down again, and they were always blown just before an intersection. And around the corner of the intersection, there was another tank gun right before you come around the corner. Mm. And that was close range. Now imagine a matter of 30 yards or something like that, you know, and it was, you have to really be careful. We lost a lot of men and tanks.
Did you develop techniques for fighting in tanks?
All you could do was go so far, stop. And there again, in a town, you don't know where your own troops are, your infantry, that is. You knew where your tanks were, but not to let you the infantry, because they were going through buildings, in and out, up and down, underneath, and I got out of my tank once in Ortona, just past the big cathedral there. And John Stone, who was the colonel of the Royal Edmunds Regiment, he and I walked up to just past. And, even then, he had his two Aboriginal snipers with him. I guess they were snipers, beautiful guys. But even then, we couldn't see where his troops were, really, because they were spread out. They were in the buildings.
Right.
And there's no one on the road. There's no one there visible.
Everybody was hiding.
Everyone was in the buildings. So it was very difficult fighting in there. You just had to hope for the best that you were getting somewhere, which you did gradually, so one corner to the next corner.
Were you getting good direction from the infantry boat?
No, we didn't get any direction at all.
You were on your own?
Left on your own. Each tank was almost left on its own because you weren't broadened out. You were one behind the other. Mm-hmm. It was the lead tank that was always in the precarious position of feeling your way.
How many tanks did you get? Were you in that were knocked out?
Just the one.
Right off the bat?
Right off the bat. Yeah.
So maybe...
But I got blown up a few times, of course, outside of the Jira. They laced us because the Jira was a little more. Jira is right on top of these Italian towns, right on top of them.
Yeah.
We ended up at the Jira at night. And we had to drive through the night, of course. And we got down to the base of this town, just this, the other side of the river. The bridge had been blown on this river, but I got across it apparently, somehow or other with my three tanks and started up the road into Ajira. And I got up there, there was nothing around, so I stopped and listened, and everything was so quiet in the town. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is something you've got to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And so we turned around and came back. And meanwhile, these infantry gunners they fixed the bridge over at the cross. And this gunner said, oh God, he said, I was just ready to follow you because we thought you were enemy tanks coming down the road. That was the second.
Going the wrong way.
Going the wrong way again. Yeah. So anyway, I pulled back. The next day we went up into Ajira and got through on the other side. And of course the roads were up and down. And the Germans knew where we had to stop. We were going to stop. This was right at noon. So we pulled into this harbor area. They call it harbors, the way to come off. We thought, well, we had a quick spot of tea and a quick bite of bully beef or whatever it was before we carried on. Because as soon as we got the Coleman stove out to make a pot of tea, down came the heavy artillery, 88th. Because the Germans knew exactly where we were.
Mm.
And I guess they'd seen us pull in there.
They already had that spot ranged.
They had it all ranged out. Down they came. And luckily I was digging a slip trench right behind my tank. My gunner was on the side of the tank making the tea. The others were inside, I guess, doing something. And down these came. This one landed right near my tank because my gunner was killed instantly. And I got blown into my slip trench. Got a piece, some splashes in my back at that time. But that was another thing. It was just go as far as you could. Stop when they wanted you to stop and fight, because that's what happened. And we did a good job. We did a good job, I think. But overall, why the powers that be let them get through the Messina Straits, pull back the whole German army.
All from Sicily.
From Sicily through the Messina Straits to the mainland without bombing them.
Torpedoing them
or doing anything at all. They were just left to go through there. Disgusting.
Yeah, because they basically got to accomplish what they wanted to, slowing
exactly.
you down in Sicily.
Exactly.
As long as they wanted.
That's right.
Now, did people I've already interviewed in both in Northwest Europe, where the following of German tanks was an issue, was it much of an issue with you, or did you encounter German tanks?
We did, in Tremoli. They were waiting there with Mark IVs.
So where was this?
Yeah. Tremoli. In Italy.
Okay.
And then on the east coast of Italy, they landed in Tremoli. There was an action there. Lost some tanks and men. But that was another trap that the Germans knew they were going to land because they watched it. And there were Mark IVs there. But that's other tanks. We ran into tanks, but they were tanks that the Germans had left mechanically. So they were there, and they used them as anti-tanks weapons, really. But there was no big tank battle like there was in Kursk and places like that. It wasn't.
Your main opponent then was the anti-tank gun.
The anti-tank gun, the 88 millimeter. Yeah, that was the big one, because they were mobile. They carried, they pulled those around, they're huge, and they pulled them around on the roads and set them up in various spots. There was artillery and anti-tank. And they had the smaller anti-tank weapons, too. But tanks, though, when we got to Northwest Europe, we never did get into really action anymore. It was just a matter of holding.
That part of the war, basically, you didn't do much even infantry support?
No, we didn't. We did a lot of holding in various German pockets that were like in the Dieppe.
When did
places
you,
like that in Rotterdam.
When did you move to Northwest Europe?
I was from Leghorn, went to Marseille, went straight up France to Minen, and we landed and we stopped in Minen. We were there for a month in Minen after we left Italy. That's right. The French border runs between, runs right through the town, meaning French and Belgian border. But we were there for a whole month, doing nothing. Because the war was just